Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Christine Hani is Senior Investigations Editor for Zero Point Zero. That's the production company behind Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown and more recently a video series called Food Crimes.
You can only count three or four things that have retained value for thousands of years. Gold and then saffron.
Food Crimes takes on foodie items from Iran's illegal saffron trade to the recent sentencing of peanut mogul Stuart Parnell for his involvement in a deadly salmonella outbreak. Christine joins us now to tell us more about that ruling and the series. And Christine, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
So your latest video traces this saga of Stuart Parnell. Remind us of what happened back in 2010 that led to his sentencing just this week.
Yes. So basically what happened was there was a company called the Peanut Corporation of America that provided peanut butter and peanut products to companies all over the United States. And starting in 2008, 2009, they had contaminated peanuts that resulted in the deaths of 9 people from salmonella and more than 750 who were sickened incredibly from salmonella because of the contaminated peanuts. These are people who simply just ate peanut butter crackers. One young boy from Vermont, all he did was have some peanut butter crackers and he nearly died. And in some other cases, people were less fortunate. So back in 2010, this case was so horrific that it really prompted the passage of the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is now really being kind of rolled out. And just this week on Monday, Stuart Parnell received one of the biggest sentences in kind of food safety and food history. He was given 28 years. The courts actually suggested life in prison for him, and pretty much he'll be going to prison for the rest of his life for his involvement in the kind of what led to the deaths of these people.
Well, tell us a little bit about that involvement. Prosecutors charged that he was complicit and knowingly sent out contaminated peanuts.
Yes. Prosecutors actually had extensive amounts of emails where he would say stuff like, just ship it. He would falsify and kind of fake documents affiliated with just the basic approvals that you needed to ship safe peanut products. So the conditions of the factories were abominable in terms of having rat droppings. In this case, he directly knew what was happening, and that was tracked by prosecutors through emails. It was all there.
Yeah, so he got 28 years, some really strange behavior from the family. His sister thrown out of the courtroom for flipping off victims.
Yes, and these are people, victims who are approaching the stand, and after years, and their relatives for the victims who could not be at the stand because they were dead, they were approaching the stand to tell the Parnells and tell the court what their lives had been like from this case, and she just flipped them off as they approached the stand.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to play a clip from Food Crimes. Now, this is Jeffrey Almer. His mom, Shirley, was one of 7 people who died as a result of this 2010 outbreak.
My mom was 72, and that was when she ate contaminated food that eventually took her life. It was after she had passed that we had found out the true cause of her death. And that made it very hard to accept.
I cannot imagine losing a loved one to what seems like a pretty freakish accident, salmonella poisoning from peanut butter, and then finding out the company had knowingly shipped contaminated food. So how significant is this ruling for cases involving foodborne illnesses?
This is a huge ruling because until now, you could pretty much run a company that kind of created an unsafe food and you could just get away with murder. So there's another individual we mentioned in our series named Jack DeCoster, who is an egg farmer up in Maine. And for more than 40 years, investigators have been trying to, you know, trace and link him to cases of incredibly contaminated eggs. And he was just sentenced in the spring, but that was really only for a few months, and he's appealed it. So he isn't even going to jail for that at this point. So this is huge. The message this sends to the food industry is that if you create contaminated products that kill people, that sicken people, there will be consequences. You know, we interviewed one man who in 93, his toddler son died in the E. coli outbreak associated with Jack in the Box.
Mm-hmm.
None of those executives ever went to jail or anything like that.
Now, I've never heard of Parnell Foods. Which products contained Parnell peanuts?
It was actually nearly 4,000 products. And so that would include, at that time, it was Keebler peanut butter crackers. It was Austin brand peanut butter crackers. It also included peanut paste. And these are peanut products that can appear in like dog foods and pet foods. So it was pretty extensive. It wasn't just like jars of peanut butter. And in fact, his jars of peanut butter weren't that well distributed. They were products that were distributed to nursing homes, hospitals. So they weren't something you would necessarily see on a store shelf.
But still very vulnerable populations.
Yes. And they say that victims of foodborne illnesses, something like globally, 40% of the victims are under the age of 5. Mm. So they really kind of target the vulnerable. Jeffrey Ulmer's mother had recovered from cancer, and then she died from some peanut butter crackers.
Yeah. We're speaking with Christine Hawney. She's senior investigations editor for Zero Point Zero, and she's behind a video series called Food Crimes. And it covers stories from illegal seafood to illegal saffron markets to the downfall of the peanut mogul Stuart Parnell. Christine, Food Crimes, I mean, is this the kind of series that's going to make it really hard to feel comfortable shopping at the grocery store?
Yes. I mean, that's actually what our team struggles with. Like, what do we eat? What do we not eat after covering the series? And we felt that a lot also when we investigated fish and the fact that 1/3 of the fish we consume is illegal now. So it does make it harder to shop in our grocery stores, but hopefully will also make kind of food companies more accountable to what they're putting on our shelves.
Well, not all the videos do end with people getting sick. Your second episode is all about the illegal saffron trade. Let's hear just a clip from that.
It's a good way to launder money. People who want to take out their wealth of Iran, put 12 kilos of saffron in their suitcase and bring in $50,000 out.
Yes, exactly like drugs. For larger volumes, there's a more common corporate strategy. It's called Spain.
If people want to bring saffron into America, you have it relabeled in Spain or elsewhere, and then you can bring it to America. And everybody knows the scam. And that's the way it is, because if we stop getting Iranian saffron, there would be no saffron in the world.
The Saffron Underground. How did you find out about this story?
This is a really fun story to report. So I found out about this from just talking with chefs in New York City restaurants, and they were talking about the kind of illegal saffron. And I kept asking, why is saffron illegal? Well, 90% of the world's production of saffron comes from Iran, which immediately makes it illegal. And if you're a chef and you want to work with some of the best saffron, you typically want your saffron to come from Iran. So, so you kind of do whatever you can to get the best quality ingredients.
The illegality of Iranian saffron has been largely due to U.S. sanctions. So if the nuclear deal is adopted, would that shift the story behind the saffron trade?
It's our understanding that there has been an agricultural exemption made with the Iran deal, which would allow for saffron to be shipped back into the United States. Yes. So there was a time, and saffron has this wonderful history in how it's kind of tied up in U.S. politics, where there was an exemption, and, you know, we did interview a saffron importer. But one day there was just something in the Federal Register that said, you know, it took the exemption away and you couldn't get saffron into the country anymore. But things are looking promising for anyone who wants to make, you know, a nice paella or bouillabaisse with Iranian saffron.
Food is just such an interesting topic. You know, we use it for so many different things, and it has so many different meanings. I'm wondering what makes it kind of strange and kind of fabulous subject for a crime documentary series.
Oh, you're right. It's absolutely wonderful. You know, I came from the New York Times. I've sent 2 people to prison in my reporting in the past, and I'm loving covering food because there's so much corruption. You know, you have products that are vulnerable, that expire. They all have shelf lives. You need to kind of move them quickly. And there's something very kind of emotional about people's food and their affiliations with it. So I'm finding that the food industry is kind of rich, rich, rich with corruption, which has been, you know, like a catnip for journalists. But we definitely have further to go for our food supply to be safer.
Well, it's also a super powerful lobby. I'm just thinking, you know, what Oprah said about beef and how hard they came down on her. Any fear or any threat so far from big food?
Yes, we did have one threat on the fish episode, and we did notify the authorities. And so that did come in on that. Not on saffron. And, you know, the Parnell case has been interesting because there have been, you know, threatening behavior towards the victims of the Parnell case. So, yeah, there is some element, I guess, of danger with people taking food and their livelihood so seriously. And you're absolutely right. These are incredibly powerful lobbies.
What else are you thinking of covering with food crimes?
The next episode that we're filming right now is wine fraud, which has been fascinating. I mean, that's the very, very wealthy, and they're just getting taken for millions upon millions of dollars. And so that's been fascinating. I'm also looking into dairy and the whole raw milk movement, and that goes to your point about the, you know, the dairy lobby is incredibly powerful. So, you know, dairy can also extend to cheeses. We all love our cheeses. There's quite a few cheese recalls happening right now. So that's interesting. So there's just a lot to mine ahead for us.
Well, Christine, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Christine Hawney, she's Senior Investigations Editor at Zero Point Zero, which is producing a video series that's called Food Crimes. Now, you can check out the first three episodes already. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org.